Radio Prague News.
British far-right activist Tommy Robinson is set to appear in the Czech lower house of parliament on Friday. The head of the Czech counterintelligence service, Michal Koudelka, has received a top award from America's CIA, and Czech firefighters have had to deal with an increased number of fires over the past few days. The British far-right activist Tommy Robinson is set to appear in the Czech lower house of parliament on Friday, the Daily Deník N reports. Mr. Robinson, who is coming to Prague on the invitation of ANO party MP Milan Pour, is due to attend a conference on children's rights with a lecture on the so-called grooming gangs in Britain. The former leader of the right-wing activist group English Defence League, who currently serves as a political advisor to the leader of the UK Independence Party, has a criminal record with convictions for a number of offences. Mr. Robinson has also been permanently banned from Facebook and Instagram for repeatedly violating their policies on hate speech. The head of the Czech counterintelligence service, Michal Koudelka, received a top award from America's CIA last month, Lidovky.cz reported on Thursday. Mr. Koudelka was presented with the George Tenet Award, which recognizes international cooperation at CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, in early March, the news site said. Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš also attended the ceremony, which took place on the eve of a visit he made to the White House. Mr. Koudelka described the prize as the highest bestowed by the CIA. Czech President Miloš Zeman has twice refused to promote the head of the Security Information Service to the rank of general and has been critical of the agency's work. The Prague Roman Catholic Archbishopric has filed criminal charges against a priest accused of the sexual abuse of a child, the news outlet Deník N reported. Archbishop Dominik Duka removed the priest from service at the weekend, the Czech news agency said. An alleged victim of the priest in question, Jiří Kilar, said in a statement that Cardinal Duka, who is the head of the Czech Roman Catholic Church, had begun to feign a forceful response to the issue of sex abuse in recent days. Mr. Kilar, who was 12 at the time of the alleged abuse, said his case had been made public last September and nothing had been done for months. Prague will be hosting an international conference on cybersecurity at the beginning of May, Deputy Foreign Minister Aleš Chmelař said on Thursday. The event will be attended by representatives from the EU and NATO, but also by experts from Australia and Japan. A debate about security of information and communication technologies was triggered in the Czech Republic by a warning by the National and Security Information Agency in connection with Huawei products at the end of last year. Czech firefighters have had to deal with an increased number of fires over the past few days, a spokeswoman for the Czech Fire Corps told the Czech news agency on Thursday. On Wednesday, firefighters were called to assist in 131 fires, which is three times the average. The upsurge in the incidence of fires had been blamed on the prolonged lack of rain in the Czech Republic in recent days. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Friday is expected to be partly cloudy with occasional showers towards the evening. Daytime highs will be ranging between 15 and 19 degrees Celsius. I'm Ruth Franková and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up in today's programme, pressure is mounting on the Czech trade minister to resign over last week's China-Taiwan diplomatic incident. Prague Mayor Zdeněk Hřib has dismissed the coalition partner allegations that spy techniques will be used on the city's homeowners. And later we will bring you a special interview with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg on the alliance's 70th anniversary. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Pressure is mounting for Prime Minister Andrej Babiš to recall Trade and Industry Minister Marta Novákova over a diplomatic incident that has highlighted China's efforts to assert its influence in the Czech Republic. The revelation that a representative of Taiwan had been forced to leave a diplomatic meeting at the Trade Ministry at the request of the Chinese ambassador has sparked widespread criticism from politicians across the board. Daniela Lazareva has the story.
A reset in Czech-Chinese relations in 2014 aimed at boosting trade, investment and tourism between the two countries brought a surge of diplomatic activity and political contacts. Following years of virtually no top-level visits, President Zeman undertook a series of trips to China, hosting his Chinese counterpart in Prague and holding a Czech-Chinese business forum at Prague Castle. While critics warned about the danger of trading human rights for economic interests, advocates pointed out that some of the world's leading democracies were falling over themselves to do business with China, and the Czech Republic had no reason to stand on the sidelines. However, last week's incident at the Trade Ministry showed that, while this may be so, Czech officials will need to coordinate their policy more closely when it comes to China's attempts to assert its influence in the Czech Republic. There is widespread agreement across the political spectrum that the incident in which the Taiwanese representative was shown the door was a diplomatic failure and a major embarrassment. 40 Czech senators are now calling for the minister's head. Senator Marek Hilscher explains why.
We think it was unacceptable blackmail on the part of the Chinese ambassador, and as a proud and self-confident country, we should not have bowed to the pressure. We have to make it clear that there must be no repeat of such behavior. Our political representatives, including the trade minister, must be perfectly clear on this point.
Minister Nováková herself admits that the situation was mishandled.
The problem was that my team failed to consult the matter properly with Czech foreign ministry officials. I had no idea what was happening and found myself in the middle of this unpleasant situation when I arrived at the meeting. As to my political future, it is up to the Prime Minister to decide.
Prague Mayor Zdeněk Hřib from the Pirate Party revealed that the Chinese ambassador had made a similar request of him during a New Year's meeting of the Prague leadership with a diplomatic corps and had been refused point blank. The minister should have known what to do, he said, adding that during a business trip to Taiwan this week, he had told the president of Taiwan that human rights are of greater importance to Czechs than getting a panda from the Chinese. The trade minister has also come under fire from the head of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the Chamber of Deputies, Lubomír Zaorálek, who said the minister should not have bowed to pressure and warned that the decision could set a dangerous precedent. The Foreign Affairs Committee has summoned representatives from both the trade and foreign affairs ministries for an explanation. Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček, who is currently on a working visit to the United States, has said he plans to discuss the matter with Minister Nováková in person on his return. And Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, who is besieged by journalists over the scandal, has refused to confirm speculation that the trade minister's days in office are numbered. Asked whether he had lost trust in her, Mr. Babiš gave reporters a terse no comment.
And that was Daniela Lazarová with that report. The Prague City Hall Coalition is due to meet on Friday to discuss a controversial proposal to collect anonymous data from electricity meters to identify vacant housing units. Mayor Zdeněk Hřib of the Pirate Party, which is behind the move, says despite alarm calls by his coalition partners, the intention was never to try to identify the owners of vacant properties, whether foreign speculators or local investors, in order to tax them. Brian Kennedy has more.
Jiří Pospíšil of Topo 9 called the pirates' idea to track electricity meters, quote, a left-wing experiment that had ignited the first crisis in the Prague City Hall coalition. The leading daily Mladá Fronta Dnes opined on Thursday that it was a Marxist idea which would lead to higher property taxes and eventually the creation of a revolutionary tribunal. For his part, Mayor Zdeněk Hřib, who was on an official trip to Taiwan when Topo 9 called a press conference condemning the electricity meter plan, says the Pirate Party never suggested anything of the sort.
It's a misunderstanding, and it's a pity that instead of picking up the phone and asking about our actual intentions, someone chose to call a press conference. It also bothers me to hear someone absurdly denigrate the Czech Pirate Party as a bunch of communists or spies, which of course is not at all true.
Což samozřejmě žádná pravda rozhodně není. The pirates do want to collect data about vacant dwellings using electricity meters, he says, with the aim of addressing the chronic shortage of affordable housing. But even if it wanted to, Prague City Hall has no power to impose higher taxes on anyone, including investment apartment owners.
I think it is important that we run the city based on actual data and use real information as the basis for discussion. The objective problem which Prague faces is a housing crisis. In part, this is because of a slowdown in construction, but the problem is much bigger than that, and it's important to address the housing crisis comprehensively and fairly.
Mayor Schieb notes opposition to supporting large developers' projects, for example, as the prevailing opinion is many such flats are purchased as investments and may long sit vacant. But without actual data, this is a perception based more on hearsay than on fact. To make good policy decisions, Prague City Councillors need a full, accurate picture of the housing market. Taking anonymous readings of electricity meters will not infringe on anyone's rights, he says. Preliminary inquiries have been made with electricity providers, such as the PRE group. Big Brother will not be watching you.
We're not looking to determine how any specific flats are being used. It's about collecting and analysing anonymous data, from which we can see that in District X there are many unoccupied flats, while in District Y the situation is quite different. Ideally, we could compare historic occupancy rates to spot trends. The information would help us identify the nature of the problem, above all, whether something is a real problem in Prague.
That said, if the data show, for example, high and long-term vacancy rates, especially in new developments, councillors could present proposals to the parliament. Meanwhile, Mayor Schieb says taking concrete steps to facilitate housing construction in Prague is at least part of the solution.
And that was Brian Kennedy ending that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for the main feature of the day. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization was established on this day, April 4th, 70 years ago. Today, NATO has 29 members, including the Czech Republic, which joined in 1999. In connection with the alliance's 70th anniversary, Czech radio European analyst Filip Nerad interviewed NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg in Brussels.
NATO is now celebrating 70th anniversary. What was the biggest achievement of the alliance during this time?
The biggest achievement is that we have been able to preserve a peace. The purpose, the reason why NATO was established was to preserve peace and to safeguard freedom. And we have been able to do that for the 12 founding members, but over the last decades for more and more members. You know, we, as late as at the end of the Cold War, NATO had 16 members. Now we have 30 members, soon as we have 29 now, but soon North Macedonia will join. So then it will be 30 members. And the biggest success of the alliance has been that we have been able to preserve peace by providing credible deterrence, credible defense. The purpose of being strong, the purpose of investing our armed forces is not to provoke a conflict, but it is to deter a conflict. And we have to remember that the leaders, the people that created NATO back in 1949, they have lived through two world wars, the First and the Second World War. And for them it was of paramount importance to prevent anything like that from happening ever again. And then also saw the Soviet Union, communism, dictatorship taking a hold on Europe. For instance, also the Czech Republic, or what was then Czechoslovakia, was suffered very much under Soviet rule and oppression. So both to preserve peace, to avoid anything like the Second World War to happen again, and to stand up against communism, dictatorship, we established NATO, and we have been successful in doing exactly that, preserving the peace and safeguarding freedom.
And what about the mistakes? Even today, the bombing of Serbia is being questioned, or the speed of reaction on the onset of the Islamic State, whether any mistakes during this...
I'm not counting mistakes, but of course we will always learn lessons from history, from our missions and operations, from our experiences. And I think that one of the lessons we have learned from Iraq and the fight against Daesh is that we have to always be prepared to engage in military operations to fight, for instance, extremists as Daesh, ISIL. But another lesson learned both from Iraq and Afghanistan is the importance of trained local forces. In the long run, it's more sustainable and better in the fight against terrorism if local forces, the Afghan security forces in Afghanistan or the Iraqi security forces and army in Iraq, can fight terrorism themselves, because we will always be foreigners, we will always come from another country. So therefore NATO is now more and more focused on how to train, how to advise local forces, enabling them to stabilize their own country. And that's one of the lessons we have learned, for instance, from Afghanistan. When it comes to the Balkans, I think we have to remember that NATO was key in helping to end two wars in the Balkans. First in Bosnia and Herzegovina, we saw the atrocities, we saw the massacres in Srebrenica, and then we also saw violence against civilians in Kosovo. And more than a year of diplomatic efforts didn't succeed, actually failed, and then we went in and helped to also end the violence and the killing of civilians. And since then, NATO has been in Kosovo, helping to provide a safe and secure environment and to protect all people, including, of course, the Serbs.
What are the current and future biggest challenges for the alliance, in your perspective?
The main challenge is the unpredictability, the uncertainty. I think what we have learned from both the fall of the Berlin Wall, the Russian annexation of Crimea, the rise of ISIS, or 9/11 attacks against the United States in 2001, is that it's very hard to predict the future, because hardly anyone was able to predict these very important events for the alliance. So what we have to be able to is to deal with the surprises, because there will be surprises.
And is NATO ready?
Yes, that and especially because now we see a more uncertain, more unpredictable security environment. We have increased the readiness of forces. We have increased the presence of NATO in the eastern part of the alliance. We have implemented the biggest reinforcement of our collective defense since the end of the Cold War, especially by increasing readiness, improving intelligence, surveillance, and also reforming the command structure, so we are now able to move forces across the Atlantic more quickly. We have a new command both for Atlantic and one for Europe, which is especially focused on planning, exercising the movement of forces. So NATO is agile, NATO is able to react much more quickly than we were just a few years ago, simply because it is a more unpredictable security environment.
You mentioned Afghanistan. President Trump announced that the United States will withdraw 7,000 U.S. troops from Afghanistan. If it is the U.S. Part of the NATO training mission, will NATO also leave Afghanistan?
No decision has been taken. That has been clearly stated many times from the United States on the question of level of U.S. presence in Afghanistan. What is going on is a dialogue, a peace process between the United States and the Taliban. The United States is consulting very closely with NATO allies. The chief negotiator, Ambassador Khalilzad from the United States, he has visited NATO three times, consulted closely with NATO allies, so NATO allies are involved in this process. We support the process because we are in Afghanistan to create the conditions for a peaceful and negotiated solution. And I'm absolutely certain that one reason why we now see at least some progress in the peace process is that NATO has so clearly conveyed the message that we are in Afghanistan to send a message to the Taliban that they will not win on the battlefield. They have to sit down and reach a political agreement with NATO, with the United States, with the Afghan government at the negotiating table. I hope, it's too early to say, but I hope, of course, that this process will lead to an agreement, to a ceasefire, to a negotiated political solution. And then we have made it very clear that we went into Afghanistan together, all NATO allies. We will make decisions of future posture in Afghanistan together, because we are there together to fight international terrorism.
But, for example, Czech President Miloš Zeman constantly reiterates that it's not possible to negotiate it with terrorists. Shouldn't it be the case of Taliban as well?
But at the same time, I think we all have to recognize that we need a political solution. We have been there now for 17 years. There is a high price, human lives, economic price. So, of course, at some stage, we need to try to find a political solution. But there is a very close link between our military presence, our presence of NATO troops, advisors, trainers in Afghanistan, and our economic support to the Afghan army and security force, and the progress on the negotiating table. Because Taliban has to understand that we are committed, we will continue to support the Afghans until we see a deal, until we see a peace deal. And that's exactly why we continue to stay, to create the conditions for negotiated solutions.
The hottest topic of nowadays in NATO is the INF treaty. Have you tried to persuade either President Trump or U.S. administration to change their mind regarding the INF? It seemed that you have taken the U.S. Position into account and did not try to change it despite the importance of the INF treaty.
Yes, but we have to understand what the problem is. The problem is not the United States. The problem is that we have a treaty, the INF treaty, signed in 1987, banning all intermediate-range weapons. Over the last years, Russia has violated that treaty. This was first raised by the Obama administration almost 6 years ago, then by the Trump administration, and all NATO allies support the U.S. determination, the U.S. assessment, that Russia is in violation. And several allies have independently assessed that Russia is violating the treaty, with new missiles, which are now have deployed over several years, SSC-8. They are nuclear capable, they are hard to detect, they are mobile, they reduce the warning time, and therefore also the threshold for any use of nuclear weapons in a conflict, and they can reach European cities. No arms control deal work if it's not respected. If it's only respectable on one side, then it does keep us safe. There are no new U.S. missiles in Europe, but there are more and more new Russian nuclear-capable missiles in Europe. That's the problem. So the responsibility for saving the treaty lies with Russia. They have to come back into compliance. United States, NATO allies, NATO have called on Russia again and again to come back into compliance. That's the only way to save the treaty.
You said that if Russia does not comply with the INF, NATO will respond appropriately. How?
This is a very serious issue. So we have decided that we will take our time, we will consult, we will analyze, assess different options before we make any decision. And we have to remember that the withdrawal process will take 6 months and was triggered in the beginning of February. So until August, it's possible to save the treaty.
And do you believe in it?
At least we need to continue to work for it, because this treaty has been so important for our security, for arms control. It's a cornerstone arms control agreement, which has been of a extreme, also very big importance for all of us. Therefore, we need to seize any opportunity to continue to call on Russia to come back into compliance, and we'll continue to do that at least until August, when the withdrawal process will be finished. At the same time, we cannot be naive. Russia has now for almost 6 years violated the treaty. Allies agree on that. Two U.S. administrations agree on that. Obama and Trump administrations agree on that. So therefore, we need also to be prepared for a world without the INF treaty and with more Russian missiles in Europe. We are now assessing. Our military commanders are looking into different options. It's too early to say what the outcome of that process will be. What I can say is that we will be measured. We will be coordinated as a NATO alliance. We will be defensive. And we don't have any intention of deploying new nuclear ground launched missiles in Europe. We don't have to mirror what Russia does, but we need to make sure that we have effective, efficient deterrence and defense in Europe, also in the world with more new Russian nuclear missiles.
Speaking about the Russia, what is its goal regarding the NATO?
Russia has publicly many times expressed that they would like to see a world where NATO is not longer existing, to break down the alliance, to divide us. At the same time, what we have seen is that actually NATO is stronger than it has been for many years. And we see that despite some differences between North America and Europe on issues like trade or climate change, in NATO, we're actually doing more together than for many, many years. We have increased the readiness of forces. We have deployed NATO troops in the eastern part of the alliance with new battle groups. We are modernizing the command structure. And the United States is increasing their presence in Europe with more forces, more exercises, more investment in infrastructure. So the reality is that we are actually standing together in a more unpredictable world. And that's the strength of NATO, is that we have been able to be united and change and adapt when the world is changing.
And that was NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg speaking to Czech Radio's Filip Nerat in Brussels in connection with the alliance's 70th anniversary. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.